The tanker does not answer the radio. Its signal is dark. Its hull rides low. The sea around it is calm, almost indifferent. On the bridge of a U.S. Coast Guard cutter, no one raises their voice. They do not need to. Silence this close to Venezuelan waters is not empty. It is deliberate. The cutter closes distance, staying just outside the invisible lines that divide authority at sea. 12 nautical miles ahead, the rules change. Behind them, pressure is legal. This is not a chase. No weapons are drawn. No orders shouted. Yet every mile tightens the moment. The tanker knows it is being watched. The cutter knows it cannot cross the line. U.S. officials call this enforcement. Venezuelan officials call it intimidation. Both sides insist the law is on their side. Between them is a stretch of water where no one fires a shot, but nothing is neutral. In this space, presence becomes power, silence becomes strategy, and the sea becomes a test of how far authority can reach without ever touching. Chapter 1. Pressure on the water. The radar contact appears just after dawn. Calm sea, clean horizon, nothing dramatic at first glance. The tanker moves steadily west, heavy and slow, riding low in the water. Its automatic identification signal is dark. On the bridge of the cutter, the watch officer does not raise his voice. He does not need to. The absence of a signal is enough. It turns a routine patrol into a question that cannot be ignored. The cutter holds course in international waters, south of the main Caribbean shipping lanes, close enough to Venezuela that the boundary lines matter. Every mile here is counted. Every decision is logged. The crew has done this before. The checklist is familiar. Confirm position. Verify signal status. Cross-reference hull shape and size. Compare speed. Everything is methodical. Nothing rushed. The tanker does not change course. Official guidance is clear. Vessels that deliberately disable identification systems raise compliance concerns. That does not make them guilty. It does make them subject to scrutiny. The cutter closes distance, keeping a safe buffer. Salt spray lifts over the bow. The sea stays cooperative. Blue sky, high visibility, no weather to hide behind. On deck, the boarding team checks gear, helmets, vests, radios, no weapons drawn. This is not a raid, it is enforcement. The tanker's hull fills more of the horizon with every minute. Rust streaks along its side. No flag is visible from this angle. The name is painted low and faded. The letters are readable, but unclear. The watch officer orders a hail on maritime radio. Standard language, calm tone. Identify yourself. State your flag. State your last port of call. No response. The silence tightens the air on the bridge. It does not escalate yet. Silence alone is not a crime. It is a factor. The cutter logs the attempt. Time written out for the record. 7:12 a.m. local. A second hail follows. Same words, same calm. Still nothing. The tanker continues on course, engines steady, wake unchanged. Whoever is on its bridge can see the cutter now. At this range, there is no doubt. This is the moment where enforcement becomes visible. Not dramatic, not loud, just unavoidable. U.S. officials later described this pattern as consistent with what they call dark fleet behavior. Ships that obscure ownership, routes, or destinations. Ships that move oil while avoiding oversight. The term is used carefully. It is an allegation, not a verdict. The cutter's commanding officer orders a parallel track, close enough to show presence, far enough to avoid provocation. International law allows this. Freedom of navigation cuts both ways. Observation is not interference. Communication is not seizure. Still, the geography adds pressure. Venezuela's territorial waters lie ahead, 12 nautical miles that change everything. Outside them, enforcement options exist. Inside them, authority shifts. The clock matters now. On the bridge, voices stay low. Orders are short. Everyone knows the window is limited. A third hail goes out. This time, the cutter identifies itself clearly. Coast Guard, United States, law enforcement vessel operating in international waters. The tanker responds at last. The signal is weak. The accent is unfamiliar, but controlled. The officer of the watch states the vessel's name and claims a foreign flag. The port of departure is given. The destination is vague. The information does not fully match the databases. That does not end the encounter. It deepens it. The cutter requests permission to conduct a verification boarding. The words are precise. The tone is neutral. There is no demand. There is no threat. The tanker hesitates. The pause stretches. Seconds feel longer at sea. From the deck, the boarding team watches the hull slide past. They can see crew now, faces at the rail, watching back, No visible panic, no visible hostility. The response comes, permission denied. That answer is legal. In international waters, a foreign flagged vessel can refuse boarding unless specific conditions are met. The cutter does not force the issue. Instead, the commanding officer makes another choice. He orders continued shadowing. This is where the story shifts from procedure to pressure. Shadowing is allowed. Persistent presence is allowed. It is also noticed. The tanker adjusts speed slightly, not enough to call evasive, enough to signal awareness. U.S. officials later say this phase is about deterrence and documentation. Record movements, confirm patterns, build cases. They emphasize that no seizure occurs here. Venezuelan officials, in later statements, describe this same moment differently. They call it harassment. They say it is intimidation designed to choke off trade. That claim remains an allegation. For now, on the water, none of that rhetoric exists. There is only distance, speed, and lines on a chart. The cutter's crew rotates watches. The sun climbs. Heat builds. The tanker keeps moving west. Each mile closer to Venezuelan waters compresses the options. Boarding authority narrows. The cutter's posture remains careful. A regional merchant vessel passes at a distance, watching silently. Commercial shipping depends on predictability. Encounters like this ripple outward. Other captains take note. By early afternoon, the tanker alters course slightly south. The move is subtle but significant. It aligns more directly with Venezuelan coastal approaches. The commanding officer requests guidance from higher authority. The response is cautious. Maintain observation. Avoid escalation. Document everything. No one on the cutter expects a dramatic finish today. That is not how these encounters usually end. They end with exits, with boundaries reached, with unresolved questions. As the tanker nears the edge of territorial waters, the cutter slows. The line is visible on the chart, not on the sea. Invisible, but absolute. At 3:40 p.m. local, the tanker crosses into Venezuelan waters. The cutter alters course and falls back. No boarding, no seizure, no confrontation. From a distance, the tanker continues on, unimpeded. On paper, the encounter is logged as an enforcement action without interdiction. Routine language, clean phrasing. In reality, it leaves weight behind. The crew knows they will see this again. Another tanker, another silent radar contact, another narrowing window. What remains unanswered is not whether the Coast Guard acted within its authority. It did. The question pressing now is larger and heavier. How long can pressure be applied at sea before presence itself becomes a provocation? Chapter 2. Escalation without contact. The second tanker appears 3 days later, farther east, closer to the main arteries of Caribbean trade. This one is larger, newer. Its hull markings are cleaner. Its identification signal is active, but inconsistent. It blinks on and off across reporting intervals. That detail matters. An intermittent signal suggests intent, not absence due to failure, but control. It raises a different set of questions. The cutter assigned this patrol receives the data from regional monitoring. Position, speed, course. The tanker is moving north of Venezuela, not directly toward its ports, but not clearly away either. The ambiguity is the point. By now, the pattern is familiar to enforcement analysts. Vessels that drift between declared routes, ships that alter speed near surveillance gaps, tankers that change names between voyages, ownership traced through layered registries. U.S. officials later state that these behaviors, taken together, form the basis of dark fleet allegations. They emphasize the phrase taken together. No single indicator is conclusive. The cutter closes distance before noon. This time, the approach is slower, more deliberate. The crew knows the eyes on this encounter extend beyond the sea. The tanker responds promptly to radio hails. The officer sounds practiced, calm, polite. He provides documentation numbers and a flag state. The paperwork checks out at first glance. That does not end the scrutiny. The cutter requests clarification on cargo origin. The response is vague. The oil is said to be blended, purchased legally, transshipped earlier. None of those claims can be verified in real time. This is where enforcement tightens without touching. The cutter requests course confirmation. The tanker complies. For now, the sea remains calm. Bright sun, perfect visibility. Conditions remove excuses. Everything is exposed. On the cutter's bridge, the commanding officer keeps his hands flat on the chart table. No raised voices. No rush. He knows the stakes are no longer just legal. They are political. Recent statements from Washington, frame these patrols as necessary to enforce international norms and sanctions. Officials insist the goal is compliance, not confrontation. From Caracas, the language is sharper. Venezuelan officials accuse the United States of piracy. They say the patrols are an extension of economic warfare. These claims are public, forceful, and unproven. The cutter's crew hears none of that directly, but they feel it, in the caution of every order, in the restraint baked into every maneuver. Mid-afternoon, the tanker alters course. This time, the turn is more pronounced. It heads toward a narrow gap between shipping lanes, an area with less traffic and fewer witnesses. The cutter mirrors the move. This is no longer passive observation. It is pursuit, though no one on the bridge uses that word. Distance remains legal. Speed remains matched. The tanker increases speed slightly. The cutter responds in kind. The gap closes, then stabilizes. The radio crackles again. The tanker's officer questions the cutter's intentions. The words are formal but edged. The cutter responds with clarity. It is conducting lawful observation in international waters. It requests continued cooperation. The tanker does not refuse. It does not fully comply either. This gray space is where pressure builds. Other ships notice. A container vessel slows to watch. A bulk carrier alters course wide, avoiding proximity. The sea becomes a quiet audience. Regional maritime authorities receive inquiries. Caribbean governments track the movements closely. They rely on these routes for fuel, food, and trade. Disruption here spreads quickly. The cutter's command receives updated guidance. Maintain presence. Do not board unless clear authority emerges. Avoid crossing into territorial waters. The tanker edges closer to Venezuela's boundary. Not directly. Angled. Testing. The clock tightens again. U.S. officials later say this is intentional. They describe it as brinkmanship by commercial actors exploiting legal limits. That assessment remains an allegation. From the tanker's bridge, the view is different. They see a foreign law enforcement vessel tracking their every move. Recording. Waiting. As the sun lowers, the sea darkens to deep blue. Light reflects harshly off steel hulls. The visual drama rises even as action remains restrained. The cutter issues another hail. It requests confirmation of flag state authorization for the voyage. This time, the tanker delays. Minutes pass. The delay itself becomes data. Eventually, the tanker responds. The authorization is claimed but not transmitted. Technical issues are cited. The cutter logs the exchange. Time written out carefully. 5:48 p.m., local. Higher authority weighs in again. No boarding. Continue shadowing until boundary reached or compliance improves. The tanker makes its choice at dusk. It turns decisively toward Venezuelan waters. There is no last-minute dash, no attempt to outrun, just a steady line toward sanctuary. The cutter follows until the invisible wall appears on the chart. 12 nautical miles. Jurisdiction flips. At the line, the cutter slows and turns away. Once again, no contact, no seizure, no headlines yet. But the escalation is real. Within hours, Venezuelan state media broadcasts footage of the tanker's arrival. The narration frames the earlier presence as hostile pursuit. The language is absolute. U.S. officials respond with brief statements. They reiterate legality. They deny harassment. They emphasize restraint. Neither side convinces the other. In maritime circles, the message lands clearly. The Caribbean is no longer just a transit zone. It is a contested space. Ship owners adjust routes, insurers reassess risk, captains watch radar more closely. On the cutter, the crew secures for the night. Another patrol complete, another logbook filled. They know the next call will come soon. What is changing is not the tactics, it is the accumulation. Each encounter adds weight, each shadowing tightens nerves, each denied boarding sharpens rhetoric. The question moving forward is no longer whether these actions are legal. It is whether repeated pressure without resolution is sustainable. Because at sea, tension does not dissipate on its own. It either breaks or it hardens. Chapter 3. Lines that do not fade. By the time the third patrol cycle begins, the pattern is no longer anecdotal. It is documented, charts layered with tracks, logs filled with near encounters. A sequence of movements that repeat with small variations but consistent intent. This is no longer about a single tanker. It is about a system under pressure. U.S. enforcement officials describe the situation in careful terms. They point to international maritime law, freedom of navigation, flag state responsibility, the right to observe, question, and document vessels operating in international waters. These principles are settled. long-standing. What is unsettled is how they function when vessels operate at the edge of compliance by design. Flags of convenience complicate authority. Ownership structures buried under shell companies delay accountability. Cargoes labeled as blended obscure origin. None of these practices are illegal by default. Together, they form a fog. The Coast Guard's role sits inside that fog. It does not set sanctions. It does not write foreign policy. It enforces what exists where it can with restraint. That restraint is visible in the outcomes. No tanker in these encounters is seized. No crew detained. No force applied. Instead, the results are quieter. Vessels diverted voluntarily, routes altered, voyages delayed, documentation gathered for later review. Critics argue this proves overreach. They say pressure without enforcement is intimidation. They say presence becomes punishment. Supporters argue the opposite. They say pressure without violence is the point. They say visibility deters wrongdoing without triggering conflict. Both claims exist. Neither is resolved. International law offers structure, but not comfort. Boarding authority hinges on flag consent, statelessness, or clear violations. In practice, each condition is contested. Each decision carries consequence. Legal experts note that shadowing is lawful. They also note it is not neutral. Persistent presence signals power. It reshapes behavior even without contact. In the Caribbean, that reshaping is already underway. Regional governments speak cautiously. Few issue formal protests. Fewer still endorse the patrols publicly. Their interests cut both ways. They depend on open seas. They also rely on stable relations with larger powers. Privately, maritime officials acknowledge the risk. Any escalation here affects insurance rates, affects fuel costs, affects food supply chains. The sea may look empty, but it carries everything. The tanker crews feel it most directly. Each voyage now includes an added calculation: how close to boundaries, how visible to patrols, how long to linger in gray zones. For them, this is not theory. It is watch schedules and radio calls and the knowledge that silence is no longer invisible. Venezuelan officials continue to frame the encounters as violations of sovereignty. They cite the cumulative effect. They argue that repeated shadowing constitutes coercion. The United States rejects that framing. Officials emphasize that no vessel is stopped within territorial waters, that every turn away at the boundary proves respect for sovereignty. Both positions lean on the same facts. They diverge on meaning. At sea, meaning matters less than momentum. Each patrol reinforces expectations. Each shadow teaches captains what to anticipate. Over time, enforcement becomes environmental, a condition, not an event. That is the quiet power of presence. But it carries cost. Crew fatigue rises. Resources stretch. Patrol cycles lengthen. Every cutter assigned here is one not elsewhere. Commanders weigh this constantly. Where pressure is most effective, where it risks diminishing returns, there is also the risk of miscalculation. No encounter so far has turned volatile. No radio exchange has broken discipline. No maneuver has crossed into aggression. That record holds because of restraint on both sides. Restraint, however, is not guaranteed forever. Weather changes, crews rotate, political rhetoric sharpens. One mistake can collapse distance faster than any deliberate act. Maritime history is full of incidents that began without intent. A misunderstood turn, a delayed response, a vessel too close for comfort. Those risks haunt every patrol briefing. For now, the strategy holds. Shadow, document, withdraw at the line. It satisfies the law. It frustrates everyone. The larger question remains unanswered. Can enforcement built on pressure, rather than resolution, sustain itself without escalation? There is no clear metric, no finish line. Sanctions enforcement is not a campaign with an endpoint. It is a posture, a stance maintained over time. At sea, time is the hardest variable to manage. The final patrol of this cycle ends as the others did. A tanker crosses into Venezuelan waters. The cutter turns away. The logbook records the outcome. Observation only, no interdiction. From the shore, the tanker disappears into port traffic, its cargo offloaded or redirected, its voyage completed. From the cutter, the horizon clears. For a moment, the sea looks empty again, but the absence is temporary. Radar will light up, signals will blink, another hull will appear riding low. The lines on the chart will still be there, invisible, absolute. This is what modern sea power looks like, not blockades, not battles, pressure applied just short of force. Whether that pressure stabilizes the region or slowly reshapes it remains unresolved. What is clear is this. The Caribbean is no longer just water between ports. It is a space where law, power, and restraint meet every day. And every crossing leaves a mark, even when nothing touches.